Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, joining me right now, as promised, Jake Butt. Jake was a really good college football player, a tight end at Michigan for the Jim Harbaugh teams. And for the last few years, he's been an excellent analyst for the Big Ten Network. And he was in College Park on Saturday for that absolute unbelievable comeback by Washington. So let's start there. What in God's name happened on Saturday to the Terps over the final 18 minutes of that game?
Well, I mean, it literally what happened in the second half was the exact opposite of what happened in the first half. Like I can't remember ever playing in or seeing such a stark contrast of two halves. You know, Maryland was able to kind of, they were balanced offensively in the first half. They were able to at least get the run game going by their standards. They dominated the time of possession. They were able to, Pep Hamilton schemed up easy completions for Malik Washington, and Malik Washington was able to take advantage of them. His receivers caught the ball. They blocked well, and they moved the change. They succeeded on third down. And then for the Washington Huskies offense, Damon Williams couldn't connect on any of the easy ones. You know, he missed countless throws to Denzel Boston, his go-to guy, something we're not used to seeing. And then all of a sudden, come the second half, you know, Damon Williams starts connecting on some of these passes. His legs come alive, and he starts to get going. They feed Jonah Coleman. They get going. And before you know it, Maryland's offense goes three and out twice, and all of a sudden, it's Washington dominating the time of possession. It was just completely different. I can't help but think that injury to Sidney Stewart played a massive factor in this game, because Damon Williams just was not comfortable at all in the first half in the pocket. And then all of a sudden you take away one half of Maryland's pass rush, on top of the fact that Zahir Mathis was hurt during the game, and all of a sudden he's got more time and more comfortability. So, I mean, talk about a back and forth game, though. Wow, it was chaotic.
Yeah, Sidney Stewart, arguably Maryland's best defensive player, getting tossed for targeting with 4 seconds to go in the first half was a really difficult loss for them, and it hurt them in the second half. But I wanted to ask you about Maryland's offense, because I've really enjoyed your calls of games, and you were talking in the first half about what a great job Pep Hamilton, Maryland's offensive coordinator, Pep was a guy that worked with Andrew Luck at Stanford, then went to the pros and was with the Colts and Andrew Luck in his first few years in Indy. And you were just talking about how he has done a wonderful job with true freshman quarterback Malik Washington, and how he was doing a great job in the first half, you know, not putting the pressure on him, calling a balanced attack, using short, you know, quick passes, screen passes, you know, basically not putting the ball in harm's way and not putting him into a position where he had to carry the team. Did something change offensively for Maryland in the second half?
No, I don't think it changed. You know, that's what, was there halftime adjustments? Was there anything? No, I don't think it changed. I really think it just comes down to, like, execution. Like, in the first half, why it felt like Maryland was succeeding was partly because, okay, yeah, they were succeeding. They were able to run the ball. They were completing these screens and completing third downs and moving the chains. But also, the flip side was Washington was the Washington Husky offense, Damon Williams. He was missing throws that he typically does not miss, which means they're punting the ball and giving the ball away. And then there was penalties for Washington. So a lot of it was Washington hurting themselves or not taking advantage of opportunities when they were there, which gave Maryland opportunities, and they were taking advantage of it. All of a sudden in the second half, though, Washington, they're converting those third downs. They're moving the ball. And the game just has a completely different feel to it. But all that changed is Washington was executing, meanwhile Maryland wasn't.
You're so right about Washington. They couldn't do anything in the first half. They looked dead. The quarterback looked off. And then in the second half, their first four drives, after not scoring at all in the first half, all they did in the first half was punt, turn it over, and get stopped on fourth down. And then the first four drives of the second half, field goal, touchdown, 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 and then their fifth and final drive, they just ran the clock out. And you made the point during the broadcast that their quarterback, Damon Williams, didn't run in the first half, didn't seem to want to run, and then he used his legs big time in the second half, and he is fast and elusive, and it was a difference maker in their comeback. What about our quarterback? What about Malik Washington? What was your first impression of him, seeing him live?
Well, my first impression was meeting him in camp, and he was injured. He didn't practice. And my very first impression, shaking his hands, looking him in the eyes, and talking with him briefly, was, there's no way this kid was just at his high school prom a few months ago. Like, what are you? That's what we're talking about? I mean, he carries himself like an NFL vet, let alone a college vet. So it's the maturity and the leadership that jumped out right away. Seeing him in person down on the field, oh my gosh, the talent is just immediately apparent. He never looked rushed. He never looked out of sorts. He looked completely comfortable in that game. He has a maturity and ability to you know, some young guys, they press and they want to prove themselves. But Malik is very comfortable letting the game come to him, taking what the defense gives to him, and then he's got that arm talent and ability to push the ball down the field. What stunk for Maryland and what stunk for Loxley and Malik and obviously Farouk was that, as bad as that second half was, there they are with the chance and they're driving, and we just give the All-State Good Hands Award to Farouk, and Washington throws a dime on a slot fade on fourth down and hits Farouk right in the hands. Perfect throw, and yet it's what we've seen all season, a drop from the Maryland pass catchers.
It was his best. I thought it was his best throw of the night by far. I mean, it was you know, and it was right there, and they're, you know, they're in the red zone at that point, or you know, with a chance to win the game. So the one, and I've watched, you know, all five of their games now. The one thing that I kind of observed, and I'm curious if you agree or disagree, is everything you said about his poise and the physical ability and kind of his patience, which is so unusual. And again, I give Pep Hamilton a lot of credit for that. But I think his accuracy is a bit inconsistent. You say what?
Yeah. I'd say that's fair. Yeah, that's true. Streaky, it seems. You know, it seems like there, when he's on, he's really on, and then he might have a handful of throws where he's off. But, you know, it's hard because that's true for most quarterbacks. You know, I think part of it is we see what it looks like when it's working for him, that we start to hold him to this standard of it should always work for him, but that's not the standard we hold anyone to. His completion percentage looks completely different when you factor in, when you take away throwaways and factor in the drop. So to me, it's not like a noticeable negative in terms of when he is going through those spells of inaccuracy.
All right, so Is it possible that what we were just watching on Saturday, I mean, I'm a Maryland guy. I was fired up for the game. I was thinking, you know, at 20-0, oh my God, we're going to be ranked this week with Nebraska coming to town. But is it possible that we just watched, you know, a very exciting game played between two average teams?
I mean, it's possible for sure. I mean, that's the lower end of the possibility. The upper end of the possibility is that these are those two teams are dangerous with capable offenses. And, you know, I certainly felt Washington played much better than the final score might have implied against Ohio State. They just can't get out of their own way with penalties and all this other stuff. But, you know, this is the thing, though, is this is the Big Ten. Like, average, mediocre, whatever it is outside of like that tier one where you got, you know, Ohio State, Oregon, Michigan, Indiana, you know, Penn State. I don't know if you can say that right now, but yeah, that game, I mean, my goodness. But then you just have this middle portion of the conference, which is, are they mediocre, or is it just there's just no separation between 12 different teams? You know, and I lean towards it being the latter.
Interesting. I mean, going into it, and this will be the last one about Saturday, I thought Maryland was very impressive defensively, but I wasn't sure because Wisconsin, you know, is not a dynamic offensive football team this year, and they had quarterback issues when the Terps played them. But I came out of the game, even though Washington got it going in the second half and did a great job and made a lot of plays, by the way. I do think Maryland's really talented, like with NFL talent on defense. What do you say?
Oh, yeah, I agree. And the youth is, again, what's really impressive. The Stewart and Mathis on the edge. I mean, that is – those are two – I mean, gosh, I'm trying to think mentally. I mean, that's got to be, you know, one of the best group of a pass rush doer in the conference, and they're true freshmen. I feel like Maryland hit on the interior. I mean, this is a revamped defensive line, and I've been really impressed by the level of production they've been able to get from the interior of guys that are like FCS guys and MAC guys. Linebackers Wingate and Reddick are extremely athletic. Husky is a trustworthy safety. The secondary had been playing well. You know, this isn't an elite defense like an Ohio State or a Michigan.
Right.
But I you know, I came away from that game, even in the loss, saying, this team does look different. You know, there's been a lot of losses in October, and there's been a lot of losses off by, but man, there's no moral victories, but the team did look different to me, and I think that there's something to be encouraged about with that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I wanted to see that, and I saw it, and it was painful and brutal the way it ended, but it's like in so many ways I came out of it thinking, okay, they're actually even a little bit better than I thought.
Can I say one more thing, though?
Sure, please. Yeah.
The glaring issue, and this has been an issue for years, is the offensive line now, though. Like, you know, it's they have just not been able to run the ball at all all year. Why? Well, they're not able to consistently win the line of scrimmage. They did a decent job of it in the first half, though. I mean, they were literally winning the line of scrimmage. But that's the missing piece in the next level here. And when I was there for fall camp and we're watching them do their walkthroughs, you know, I didn't sense a great urgency or commitment and intention to detail from the offensive line. And Mike Locksley kind of said that in his post-game presser, that he felt the young guys didn't handle success during the bye week all too well. That is the next area, man. If they could just improve 20% or 30% in the offensive line, that's the difference between winning and losing that specific game. That's the difference between winning or losing in October and November in the Big Ten. If you can't control the line of scrimmage or at least hold your own, you know, you certainly can't get dominated, then you got no chance.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, they've been at a disadvantage in the trenches pretty much since the day they entered the Big Ten from the ACC now over a decade ago. It has been the Achilles heel for, you know, Maryland in the Big Ten, trying to compete with the big boys at Ohio State and Penn State and Michigan and Iowa. And when I say big boys, I'm talking about big boys in the trenches. They've had a couple of teams here and there that the frontline starters have been, you know, capable and competitive, but they've never had the depth on their offensive line or defensive line to really compete consistently with the powers in the Big Ten. You know, they've been able to scheme around it a little bit with, you know, like the Liatunga-Vailoa years. They generated a ton of offense and some good teams, but not upper echelon Big Ten teams. And, you know, the difference between those upper echelon Big Ten teams in Maryland, without question, have been along the offensive and defensive lines. I'm getting sidetracked here, but I wanted to get your thoughts just on Pep Hamilton's offense, which I think has a lot of pro elements to it. You know, Malik Washington's not in shotgun. He's not in pistol the entire time, you know, running zone reads and running RPOs. He's under center a bunch. They've got some zone run mixing with bootleg and play action, which ends up being a little bit more protective of them. They're trying to, you know, establish, you know, a running game. Look, they've only had two legitimate competitive opponents, so we'll see how this plays out. But I kind of like what they're doing. They're at a disadvantage maybe against some of these teams in the trenches, but I kind of like what Pep Hamilton's done with Malik Washington. I know we talked about it earlier, but do you see it the same way, that the approach is, you know, more pro elements in the offense than, you know, a pure college offense?
Absolutely. No, it's, and I give Pep credit. You know, I more people need to judge their, you know, evaluate coaching based on, you know, what's the totality of the situation? What's their level of personnel? What's their level of health? What's their capacity to understand a complex scheme? You know, Pep has that NFL background. I've been in offenses that are very similar to his, with a ton of verbiage. And, you know, they were rotating their interior. They were playing some freshmen at guard. They converted a defensive lineman, I think his name was Daniel Owens, over to tight end to try to get some blocking help there. They're bringing in extra offensive linemen. So they're trying. You know, they are trying. It's just, this is not going to be an overnight fix. But that's been a glaring issue. I mean, Billy Edwards, consistently one of the most hit quarterbacks in the Big Ten. Yep. Same thing for Talia, a smaller framed guy. Malik does a good job of getting rid of the ball.
Yeah.
But gosh, you just have to, you don't need to dominate. I don't think Maryland's ever going to have the talent to dominate the trenches, but you at least have to be able to hold your own, particularly in October and November.
All right, real quickly before I let you run, I mean, we're approaching, believe it or not, the halfway mark of of the season. It flies by. So in the Big Ten, who do you think the best team is?
I'd say the best team, it's either Ohio State or Oregon. I'm extremely high on Oregon. To me, Dante Moore is the best quarterback in the conference. But, you know, I think what I've seen out of Julian Sayin is this guy just keeps getting better and better every week. And it's real quiet because Ryan Day seems to, he's done a great job coaching this year of, you know, he understands that that Buckeye defense is lights out. I mean, they might be a historic defense. With historic playmakers and multiple guys. I think Caleb Downs is a first-rounder for sure. I think Arvell Reese could end up being a top-10 pick. They're a linebacker that's kind of like a hybrid edge. And what Ryan Day has done is said, hey, let's run the ball. Let's control the clock. They play at one of the slowest paces in all of college football. So they haven't put a ton on the shoulders of Julian Sand, their redshirt freshman. But when they have called his number, he's been outstanding. So I think it's a race between those two of Ohio State and Oregon. I have to give the edge to Ohio State right now just because I feel more confident in their defense. And I just think offensively, we haven't even seen them at their highest level yet. But I will say this too. I'm very interested, as always, the Ohio State-Michigan matchup at the end of the season, because though I can say in one breath that Ohio State is the best team in the conference, Michigan is a very bad matchup for Ohio State. And that's what we've seen these past few years.
Yeah.
So, it's weird how this works where Ohio State is just so talented, but Michigan, the way they built their team, is just a bad matchup for the Buckeyes.
That may be true. I'll tell you, in watching Michigan this year, and you've watched them a lot closer than I have, I just don't think that freshman quarterback, I know how gifted he is and how talented he is, he just doesn't look ready. It looks like he's a little raw, and maybe, you know, his year is next year, not this year.
Yeah. Well, I think he's done enough. To me, that's not my biggest concern. I think Michigan has a defense that's going to keep them in every single game. Okay, so all of a sudden, you're in every single game. How do you win these games? Well, they have an ability to control the line of scrimmage because their offensive line is good. At times, the offensive line is great, but also at times, the offensive line is average to below average. The big concern for me is the wide receiver play is extremely average. Outside of Donovan McCauley, they don't have much. Samaj Morgan, I don't think he's starting. Samaj Morgan wouldn't sniff the field for Maryland, if I'm just being completely honest with you right now, for Washington either. They saw a nice explosive game from their freshman, a guy by the name of Andrew Marsh. He's like 6'1", about 200 pounds, good, strong, true freshman receiver. But right now, I think Bryce has done enough for me to feel confident in him. It's just the pass catchers are so average around him.
I love that running back for sure. What about Indiana, Oregon? Do you give Indiana a shot? And you mentioned the Oregon quarterback. What do you think of Mendoza at Indiana?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen so many mock drafts where it's like Dante Moore at one, Mendoza at two, Mendoza at one, Dante Moore. I mean, holy cow.
Two names that weren't even talked about before the season started, and here we are 5 weeks into it, and it's all shifted.
Well, it speaks to the importance of system. It speaks to the importance of coaching and, to the level of talent around them. I absolutely give Indiana a chance. I think this will be a much tougher matchup for Oregon than Penn State was. Oregon is starting Brandon Finney, a freshman in the secondary. Naeem Offord, another freshman. They have youth in their secondary, and Penn State just couldn't do anything to try to test it. Well, Mendoza, Elijah Surratt, they have legitimate NFL talent on that Hoosiers football team. I mean, Mendoza's a first-round talent. Surratt is a day two, day three pick. They have multiple NFL offensive linemen. You guys remember Roman Emby.
Yeah, I mean, of course. He's leading him in rushing.
Yes, and they got NFL players on the defense. They might have eight guys get drafted this year. So this is a seriously talented Hoosier football team. Obviously, big test going on the road there to Austin. It is tough to hear, tough to play, but yeah. Cignetti is just, man, talk about it. We've seen such great coaching jobs in the conference this year. I look at that. That's the biggest difference in the Big Ten these days. The quality of coaching has never been better. The quality of quarterback play has never been better. Across the board, I take the Big Ten's coaches and the Big Ten's quarterbacks over every other conference right now.
Cignetti's great. He's tough to deal with, man. He can be insufferable to listen to.
Jim Harbaugh. There's been lot of similarities to him and Jim Harbaugh, in my opinion.
I think Harbaugh was always much more likable. I mean, personal opinion, but anyway.
Go back to my days. Your 2015, 2016?
Yeah.
You say the same? Okay.
I don't know. I've always liked Harbaugh, I've always understood how much his players liked him, right? I mean, you tell me about your experience with Jim Harbaugh.
Well, it was different. I mean, we liked Jim for sure, but we feared Jim. There wasn't a strong, like, close relationship. I was voted team captain alongside Chris Wormley, and I can tell you, there never did I just go sit in Jim's office and have a casual conversation. And, you know, he never asked my opinion, and it was there was a baseline of fear there. Now, we had the talent to overcome it, but that slowly hurt Jim over time. You remember that COVID year when they were just horrible.
Right.
Well, Jim hired Biff Poggi full-time, and that was a big point of emphasis where Biff said, listen, Jim, like, these players fear you. You don't have a relationship with you. They don't have a relationship with you. They'll play so much harder for you, Jim, if you invest in them. Build a relationship with them. So Jim got younger on the staff. That allowed the players to connect with the staff. Jim kind of chilled out a little bit. And there's been a big switch. To me, the Jim that we've seen starting at about that 2021 season all the way till now, he's a completely different guy inside the team facility.
Interesting.
That's
from afar, and I'm not a Michigan person. You know, that fan base is also a tough one, but you know, it's certainly iconic. It's iconic for sure. But I've always loved watching his teams, and the wins over Ohio State over the last several years have just been thrilling games, especially last year. I mean, one of the all-time stunners. Thanks for doing this, Jake. Really appreciate it. Really love your work. At JBooty88 on X on Twitter. He does a great job analyzing a lot of these Big Ten games. Appreciate it. Hope you're well. Hope to do it with you again down the road.
My pleasure. Yeah, great catching up. Sounds good. I'll be on the call this weekend for the Nebraska game. So maybe we will cross paths here.
Perfect. Well, maybe we'll talk sooner rather than later. Thanks so much, Jake.
Cool. Thank you. Take care.
Jake Butt, everybody. He's good, really good. And Maryland and Nebraska Saturday, and I know that last week was a letdown, but this could be a huge win for Maryland as well. They're 6-point underdogs, 3:30 kick in College Park, and it should be a beautiful fall day. All right, when we come back, Caps open up tonight. Joe B. will join us.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.